car runs out the door. Here's how the afternoon will go. We have three talks here. Somebody commented that it would have been hard to find two exciting talks that so contradicted each other as the two that we started with. And that's why we're going to be discussing tomorrow. As before, the talks are 40 minutes. We'll have some quick questions, but we postpone the detailed discussions till tomorrow and Sunday. And after the talks, we have a break where there's a reception, which we have every Friday, the wine and cheese for the visitors. I think it's either here or downstairs. Downstairs today on the first floor. And then we will go into the big lecture theater for the talk of Seth Lloyd, which is joined with another colloquium series. Okay, so some of us here have been very much looking forward to this talk by Professor Lett on an origin of photons and fermions from condensed matter physics. And maybe we can put the light.
Well,
yeah, let's start the off-hand version of photons. In my opinion, so there's a very, very interesting concept. There are so many very, very different ideas and angles to look at some ideal, very important physical issues. Today I'm going to discuss one way to look at photon and electron. But motivated mainly from the some research in condensed matter with my student, Michael Levin. And so I feel that there is a six very deep mysteries of nature. One is a identical particle, another is a gauge interaction, Fermi statistics, and the Y fermion massless, chiral fermion, and the last is gravity. You know, when I learned field theory, I always wonder why all interaction is gauge interaction and not some other interaction. And certainly, for Fermi statistics, it's kind of odd why we have Fermi statistics at all. The fermion, in harmony physics, people say, yeah, fermion are very heavy, some fermion are very, very heavy. But however, if you think about the natural scale, which is a Planck scale, compared to Planck scale, the only fermion we observe is kind of like 10 to minus 20, smaller than Planck scale, but they're all essentially massless. So there's certainly the issue, you know, why there are massless fermions, you know. A chiral fermion is, I feel chiral fermion is a problem maybe as fundamental as gravity. And certainly gravity, I think most people here it's rather a problem. And so the wish would be that to have a single structure which unify all these six mysteries, which is probably too ambitious. And so today we try to discuss a less ambitious goal, try to unify the first four features. And the single structure we are going to start with is a local bosonic model. So just a boson on the lattice. And why we feel that is important, because it's really not boson not important. Its locality is important. That is, the C model or bosonic model on the lattice has a feature that on each lattice side, there is a Hilbert space. Then the total Hilbert space is the direct product of Hilbert space on each side. So that's the local structure. And all the physical operator act within the Hilbert, this small Hilbert space, that's the local operator. So there's a well-defined local structure. And so the point is that whether gauge interaction, Fermi statistics, etc., can emerge from this simple local system. Okay, so the principle emergence plays a central role here. So to explain the principle emergence, let's consider two well-known equations. One is the Euler equation, which describes mechanical property of fluid or the wave in the fluid. Then another is the Lambert equation, which describes mechanical property of a solid or sound wave in a solid. These two equations are very different and also give very different low energy dynamics. The Euler equation gave you only single mode of the wave. But the Lambert equation gave you three modes, two transverse photon, photon of sound wave and one longitudinal sound wave. And actually, these two equations were discovered long ago before the discovery of atoms. So those two equations, kind of like phenomenological equations, just describe mechanical properties of liquid and solid. And then we can ask, where these two equations come from? Then here comes the atoms. You know, it turns out that these two equations come from different organizations of atoms. Like in a simple fluid, the ground state of atoms or particle is that it's an equal superposition of all different positions of particles. Because the ground state has such property, you can easily see that if I do a shear deformation of those particles, the equal superposition of the shear deformation is still something equal to superposition. So nothing. So shear deformation is still nothing operation. So that's why when you have a superfluid ground state, we only have a density mode where there's no shear mode. However, in the crystal, the atom organize differently. They have a particular position. Here, clearly, when you do a shear deformation,
the pointer is that silver thing and the yellow button.
Yeah. So if you do a shear deformation, you do get some difference. So the solid can resist both compression deformation and the shear deformation. That's why solid can have a transverse photon and a longitudinal photon. So this is really principle emergence. The different organization of the particle gave rise different collecting modes. Okay, then that's maybe more famous equation will be Maxwell equation. Then in the same light, we can see where the Maxwell equation comes from. If the Euler equation comes from equal weight superposition of atoms, and the Lambert equation comes from a particular range of atoms, where Maxwell equation comes from. And also, certainly we have a Dirac equation, which describes fermions, where Dirac equation comes from. Can they come from certain particular organization of the atoms? So that's a really kind of from emergence point of view, try to understand this. And it turns out that the answer for this question is for both questions, yes. And it's a single answer. In a sense, the Maxwell equation, the Dirac equation, can emerge from such kind of organization. That is, we have a lot of bosons. First, the bosons stick together from a polymer. And then the polymer flashes strongly from a quantum liquid. So that is the organization we are looking for. If a boson organized in such a way, so it's the ground state wave function like this. So boson form strings, but they are strong quantum fluctuations. So ground state are equal with the superposition of all kinds of strings. Then that particular organization happens to do the job. Then the fluctuating mode in this kind of ground state are described by Maxwell equation and the Dirac equation. So the bottom line is that both Gibbs boson and the fermion can emerge from very simple local boson system, and there's this kind of unifying structure for Gibbs boson and the fermions. Okay, so in a sense, it's kind of like a plastic, you know. This state, the plastic, you have a lot of polymers, but the difference is in the plastic, polymer kind of stuck together. They don't fluctuate much. If you allow polymer have a quantum tunneling to go passing each other, you may get a liquid of polymers. And that is this quantum melt of the plastic is what you need to have this kind of structure. So really, experiments in the more details. So let's consider a simple model. which is called Rocker model or Steam model. Okay, so I will use a Rocker language. So in this model, what we have is that we have a cubic lattice. And on each cubic lattice, we have a rotor. So what is rotor? Rotor simply means a particle moving on the ring. That's it. So the different quantum state of rotor are angular mansions. You can also think of rotor as a spin. You know, this angular mansion rotor can be viewed as SZ quantum mansion, SZ spin quantum number. So we can have a rotor model, okay? And but rotor model have interactions. But interactions are kind of special here. So the Hamiltonian of this rotor model have three terms. Okay, the first term is a Q squared term. The Q is the sum of the rotor angular mansion. What kind of sum? Well, it's this. On each vertex, it has attached to six links. So there are six rotor kind of connects to this vertex. So this Q is the sum of the six angular mansion of the rotor. That's a Q. The first term is a Q squared term. Second term is this particular term. This L plus L minus simply just equal to I theta, which is kind of raise or lower the angular mansion of the rotor. So this is a product of four operators. So L plus L minus, L plus L minus. For each plaquette, so on each plaquette, there's a four edge. So there's four rotor on the edge. Then you have this operator. Then you have this LV squared for each link. So that's kind of a three term. So that's kind of some local bosonic model with short range interaction. And so what I here try to explain that if U is very big and J is very small, in this limit, this model have a so-called string condensation. Then suddenly, what is a stream? So to understand the stream, so let's assume a G equal to zero. We all have a U and a J, okay? And then you can see if a G equal to zero, U and a J only depend on I L Z. So it's very simple. It's a classical model. If you know the I L Z eigenstate would be an energized state. So it's a very simple model. And clearly that if U is very big, and J is positive, then LZ to zero would minimize energy. So if LZ all equal to zero, that would become zero energy, that's one of the ground states. Okay. Now here I want to claim that, explain that if J is very small, U is very big, or even say J equal zero, we all have U term, then the ground state are highly degenerate. Why? It's this. We can draw a string on the lattice, and then make LV plus 1, minus 1, plus 1, minus 1 along the loop. You can check that sum of LV around each vertex all equal to 0, despite on each link, the LV itself not 0, but their sum around each vertex at 0. So if J equal to 0, we only have a U term. If you only have U term, J and G equal to 0, then this state would have the same energy. This state both have 0. So therefore, the zero energy states can be constructed by drawing strings, and then increasing, decreasing LV along the strings. That's it. So therefore, the zero energy states is manifold of closed strings. But when you have open strings, then you have trouble, because on this vertex, sum of LV is not equal to zero. So this open end causes big energy of order U. So that's the picture. If U is very big, the low energy subsector is closed strings. And then the open string have a gap U. Okay. The J term is a string tension. When you have a J term, then the degeneracy between closed string and this no string space, which LD to zero states, is lifted. So small J means a small string tension. And the G term is a string dynamics. What the G term do is that the G term create a small loop of strings. If you already have a string applied this G term, then you actually can change the shape of a string. So G term is a string fluctuation term, which allows strings to fluctuate. So in the large U limit, the physics of this model is determined by the competition between J term and the G term. So J term says that I don't want to have a string. String costs energy. But the G term says that if you have a stream, then you can lower the energy by allow stream to fluctuate. Because when you have a two states of same energy and the two states can fluctuate between each other, the energy of the two states are split. Then the lower, you can gain some energy because of splitting. So G term, when you have a stream, you can use G term to gain some energy. So it's not surprisingly that large U limit, let's compare these two. In the large U limit, if J term is very big, that means stream costs a big energy, but they don't fluctuate much. So the ground state prefer not to have much streams. However, in the other limit, which is J is very small, but the G is very big, then the ground state prefer to have a lot of streams. So essentially, the stream fill the lattice, and it's kind of fluctuate. So the ground state are superposition of all the streams. And this state, we call a stream net condensed state. Certainly, the net part is not clear here. But this is a U1 gate theory. And in order to have a non-abelian gate theory, the branching of streams is very important. But here, we can ignore the branching, so we can say that your stream condensed state. Okay. So in the large loop limit, we have these two phases, a small loop phase and large loop phase. And it is in the large loop phase. Large loop phase, essentially, roughly speaking, is equal to the superposition of all positions, all shape, all size of strings. Okay. And this is string condensed state. And this is actually represents a new state of matter. Because in condensed matter physics, for a long time, we feel that we understand all the phase through the lambda signature breaking theory. It turns out that that's lambda signature breaking phase do not describe all the phase. And this is a counterexample. This is a phase of a matter which has no signature breaking, and which cannot be described by lambda signature breaking theory. And but on the other hand, when you have some kind of a ground state, you can ask, what is the collective mode? You know, what is collective excitation? You know, for the superfluid, we know the collective excitation gave us a Goldstone mode, which is massless excitation. It turns out that for these stream condensed states, it also has a collective mode. But what is amazing here is that the collective mode actually satisfies Maxwell's equation. So it's really a lifelike collective mode. And there's many ways to explain that. And here I try to make a connection to the lattice gate theory. So in a sense, remember we have a rotor. Rotor is on the link. We can use this little I to label different rotors. But we can also use a pair of big I and J to label rotor. This big I actually label the vertex. So each link corresponds to a pair of vertex. Okay. So then we can say this theta I is Aij. I do this really because Aij is a variable in the lattice gate theory. So in the limit with U equal to infinity, and you really do this exercise, it turns out in the U equal to infinity limit, this rotor model is kind of mapped in the U1 lattice gate theory. It's an exact match. And you can tune the parameter that there's a classical limit. So this U1 lattice gate theory have a phase which have a Gamblin's photon. So that's a formal way to explain it. But there's other way to explain. And but here I want to emphasize is that wireline field theory, what I was taught is that the gauge theory is a theory with a gauge symmetry. So gauge symmetry is a defining property of a gauge theory. And now I realize that is wrong. Because in the finite U limit, that corresponds to lattice gauge theory, which can have perturbations which break gauge symmetry. So it's very easy to have a theory on the lattice which don't have a gauge symmetry. But that's fine. You know, even without gauge symmetry, the low energy dynamics still the same, still photon. So So the existence of a Maxwell equation or emergent photon has nothing to do with the gauge symmetry. You can break whatever symmetry you have on the lattice, and you can still have an emergent gauge photon, a gauge boson. The essence is that it's a string structure. You know, as long as you have a string condensation, then you have a gauge, you have emergent gauge boson. But however, you do not require string to be perfect. You know, string can break momentarily and then rejoin. This momentary breaking of a string is okay. It won't change the Lorentz dynamics. But the gauge symmetry requires string to be perfect. They say perfect string gave you a gauge boson. But the message here is that even your break gauge symmetry, you have a not so perfect string, that's fine. You can still have a gauge boson. So this is very important for condensed matter, because usually in the material, the Hamiltonian is not right. The Hamiltonian don't have gauge symmetry. The U is finite. But that's okay. You know, you can even for the system with no gauge symmetry, you can still have emergent gauge boson. That's a message. And certainly, when you have an order, you will have a defect. You know. And boson condensation, the defect is a vortex, okay. And here we have a string condensation. You may also ask, what is the defect in the string condensation? One of the defects in the string condensation is simply end of string, because here the ground state is superposition of closed strings, so there's no open strings. So if you allow open string, this open end would represent an excitation. And then you may ask, but this open string looks like it's an extended object. But the point is that when you have a string condensation, then the ground state already have a lot of string, or filled with strings. So when you create an open string, then the string part is kind of a merge with the ground state. It's unobservable and don't cause energy, actually. So the open string actually do not behave like an extended object. Open string actually behave like a two-point object. So this two-point object is topological defect. It turns out that this is well known for people doing this electric gate theory. That is, the LZ is like a theta dot, you know. The theta dot is an aij dot, because that's just renaming it. And aij dot, if you see a as a back potential, a dot will be electric field. So the LZ creates an electric field, and the string is a string where LZ not equal to zero, so string really a flux tube electric field, which is a standard Wilson loop, you know. So from this point of view, you can see that the end of string is a source of drain of electric field. So that's really gauge charge. So end of string is gauge charge. Okay, once you understand the end of string, then we can also understand where Fermi statistics come from. Okay, basically, the string condensate we discussed is a very simple one. In a sense, it's an equal weight superposition of all loops. But this is just one of our string condensation. There's many, many other kinds of string condensation, which correspond to superposition of different size of loops. But the amplitude may not be equal to one. Sometimes amplitude can be plus one or minus one, or some more complicated phases. So that represents more general condensation. Okay. If you don't have a plus minus sign, if you only have an equal superposition, then you can show that the end of a string has a boson statistics. They have no gradient. But on the other hand, if you want to study more complicated condensation, where this superposition sometimes plus, sometimes minus, then it turns out this change can change the statistics for end of a string. So you can get Fermi statistics in 3 dimensions are higher, and all possible non-abelian statistics in 2-dimensional system by simply modifying different string amplitude. Okay. So here I just give you an example how that was done. And we just modified the string hopping term. You can see in the old story, the string hopping term is just we add a string. Every time we add a string, we have amplitude. Then for that particular amplitude, equal to superposition turns to be 1/6. Here we modify the amplitude of string hopping to add some kind of phase here. But the phase is complicated. It's not just counting the phase. Whether it's plus one or minus one depends on the angular momentum on two other sides. So 1, 2, 3, 4 is this four side. 5, 6 are legs of this square. So 5 is this side. 6 is left, is this side. So angular momentum on 5 and 6 control whether you have +1 or -1 when you're adding these small loops. Okay. And if you do something like that, then that's it. Here, this kind of modification would change the statistics of annual stream from bottom to front. Okay. And so let me very quickly explain why is that. And first, I would introduce this string creation operator, which is L plus, L minus, L plus, L minus. If you do that along a line, that's a string creation operator. Okay. And so this is in a simple string model, this is a string creation operator. And why we say this string creation operator? Because this operator computes with the Hamiltonian. And this is very important. This operator commutes with Hamiltonian, that means that when I create a closed string, it does not cause energy. Okay. However, when you have this modified Hamiltonian with this phase term, when you do this, and we have this term, have this additional phase, then this operator no longer commutes with Hamiltonian. But however, another operator, which is a string operator with this additional phase, would commute with Hamiltonian. So the string operator is modified. And this phase term actually has a very regular rule construct. In a sense, we draw a string, then we draw a framing, in a sense, another string parallel to that. Then from this framing, we can determine which leg cross this frame. And then the angular momentum here only have those angular momentum. It's on the crossed leg, not on those uncrossed leg. And this has something, the framing is very important. And for people who know this, you know, to have a fraction of framing statistics, framing is very important. And here, that's how the framing appears. And once we have this string operator, then we can determine statistics. Why? Because you say, this really depends on what you mean by Fermi statistics. You say, Fermi statistics, you need an operator which sometimes commute. And here we don't have any operator which doesn't commute. If you don't have sometimes commuting operator, how do you get the Fermi statistics? So the message here is that it is not very physical to define Fermi statistics using anti-commuting operators. And a more physical way to determine Fermi statistics is that to consider the algebra of hopping operator. So here the picture is that we have a particle on the lattice. Then we have a hopping operator to hop one particle from here to here to the next side, then another side. So we have a hopping operator. And it is the algebra of a hopping operator that determines the statistics of particle. Why? So here let's consider we have a particle A and A and B, yeah, the point one A, one on B. So what we do is that, one on A, one on B, okay. What we do here, we first hop A to B, then hop B to C, then we hop D to B. That's one way of hopping. Another hopping is that we first hop D to B, B to C, then A to B. You can see there's two different ways of string hop. Have a different end state. The end state exactly has two pattern exchange. So if this product and three hopping operator are equal, then that means this kind of hopping Hamiltonian actually describes a particle with both statistics. However, if this three hopping operator have a minor sign here, if the different order have a minor sign here, then that means it have a Fermi statistics. Okay. And the string operator we construct before happens to be this calling operator. Why? Because an open string operator means I create a particle and antiparticle and two n. So which can also be viewed as open string operator, which is hops one particle from here to here. So open string operator is a Hopping operator. So once we know the operator which creates open string, essentially we define the Hopping operator. So therefore, this algebra of a Hopping operator is actually, in our language, became an algebra for open string operators. And once we define open string operator, we can just plug in and check. In the older string operator, the operator would create a small second open string, very simple, just L plus and L minus, etc. And these are three examples. These are three operators which commute. And when you have addressed the string which have these legs, then you have this actual face. And those multiply the string operator actually have the algebra with a minus sign. So that's kind of explain why for this multiplying string, the end string became fermions. Okay. So another very important issue is the masslessness of fermion. And here I just want to describe some very rough idea. And so again, let's look at this Hopping. So you see, the end of a string is a particle. So this particle are described as some kind of effective Hopping polynomial. So this is a Hopping polynomial. Now here we ask the question, what is the symmetry of the Hopping polynomial? And one easily say, well, you must have a translation symmetry because your original system have a translation symmetry. So Hopping should also have a translation symmetry. And what happened here is that it's more tricky than that. Because a single end of string never appear alone. The end of string always appear in pairs. Okay. So we only physical state are two particle states. We never have a single particle state. Okay, what that means? That means it is a translation of a two particle together realize translation symmetry. For example, the translation of two n would satisfy the translation algebra, which is namely commute. But however, when you translate one n, you know, they may not satisfy translation algebra. You make the translation in x and y direction may not commute. You could have minor sign here. And this is actually what happens. Depend on different string condensation. For some string condensation, the Hopping polynomial and the string realize translation symmetry. For some other string condensation, the Hopping polynomial realize a projective translation symmetry. Means the x, y translation may not commute. They may have a minor sign. And this minor sign turns out to be very important. If you do have a minor sign, then that's correspond to a particle hopping in a lattice with a pi flux going through each plaquette. And when you diagonalize the Hopping polynomial, you'll see direct nodal point. That's it. This is in the gate theory, it's called a staggered fermion. And so different string condensation can produce the Hopping polynomial for staggered fermion. Once I have staggered fermion, that's massless, you know. So therefore, the masslessness of fermion can again be explained by string condensation. Here, I just want to say what kind of string condensation gives you pi flux, which is the amplitude of string depends on how many plaquettes the string enclose. If a closed loop enclose even number plaquettes, the amplitude is plus. If they enclose all number plaquettes, the amplitude is minus. For such kind of string condensation, you have massless fermion. Then certainly there's another theory which also have a name string in it. So let me try to make some comparison. This string condensation or string liquid picture and the superstring theory. And essentially, the main difference that that means this order. And this is the old interpretation of superstring. I don't understand new interpretation. So according to the old interpretation, all the elemental particles correspond to a small second string, whose size about the Planck scale. And the different vibration mode of this segment of a string give you different type of particle. According to this string liquid theory, that is, the ground states are filled by very large strings. The size of strings as big as universe. And it is a collective motion of a string give you Gauge boson. And the one end of the string give you Fermion. So that is a very, very different. And another thing is that the fermion in super string theory comes from the super symmetry, which is a fundamental property of the theory. And certainly, a fermion in string liquid theory will be just a one end open string. It's emerged not a fundamental property. And for this string liquid picture, there is a prediction. The prediction is that all the composite fermion must carry non-trivial gauge charge. Because the fermion always appears at the end of the string. And the string itself is a gauge boson. So composite fermion must carry gauge charge. And that's kind of rule of 1-2-3 standard model. Because when in 1-2-3 standard model, there are composite fermion which completely gauge neutral. On the other hand, if you supplement some Z2 gauge group, you know, there's some actual Z2 gauge theory in the standard model, then the problem can be fixed. So the prediction from this picture is that the 1-2-3 standard model must contain additional discrete gauge group. That means there must be some kind of a cosmic string associated with a discrete gauge group. And by the way, the SO time quantum unification theory satisfies this condition. That all the composite fermions in SO time quantum unification theory are gauge non-neutral. And so the status that right now we can construct a speed model which produces a two-thirds of standard model, which is the U1 part and SU3 part, with the left-hand part and etc. But we have trouble to do chiral fermions, because this is the largest model, and how to get a chiral fermion last model is a long-standing problem. So we don't know how to get a chiral fermion, and certainly we don't know how to get gravity. So I don't know whether in this approach, whether one can solve this last two problems then to have a real unification. So in a sense, I try to say, this may be what our matching looks like. But on the other hand, from a kinesthetic point of view, this picture tells us how to design a material. When the material has this some kind of interaction, has this kind of ground space, then this material actually is artificial vacuum, and we can have artificial elementary particle in this material. And this is one of a major push in kinesthetic physics right now. Thank you.
We have
time for one or two very quick questions.
Yes.
What is the scale of your underlying theory? I mean, do I expect to see this ring that AHC, for example?
So the largest scale, if I really want to push this to use this to explain the elementary particle, the large scale is at least a gap scale, which is not so far from Planck scale. So that's the trouble. That is the Z2 vortex may have a huge tension, which probably are hard to observe, because the Z2 vortex is a gap scale vortex. That is probably hard to observe.
Okay. One quick question.
Yeah.
Is your starting Hamiltonian special in some way, or is there a classic Hamiltonian?
No, it's all the physics I discussed here are stable against arbitrary perturbation. You don't need any symmetry, you don't need any thing. You know, you can put any perturbation, the physics at low energy do not change. So they all have a topological stability.
Okay. I just wanted to ask how surprised you should be to see all this, because in quantum theory, of course, you know that there are possibilities of having, let's say, a 2+1-dimensional nonlinear sigma model which gives rise to dynamical gauge fields in the spectrum, or
the trouble is in 2+1 dynamical gauge field, they don't have a gauge boson at low energy. I'm talking about specific heat. You have to produce a specific heat like a black body radiation.
Physical gauge fields.
No, they don't have a that specific heat in 2+1 dimensional.
The creation of fermions from bosons, there's the famous spin from Einstein, phenomenon where you start with bosonic field theory and...
No, you cannot do that. The thing, well, if you regularize that theory, if you regularize that theory on a lattice, you have to have a fermion. You ought to have that solid control. That's skirmion. In order for skirmion to have a fermion, the regulated theory must contain fermions that degree freedom. The only electric monopole is a...
Okay, so that's more to discuss. Let's thank Professor Weinstein.